We'll call this meeting to order if we can rise to the pledge of allegiance.
The pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the first item on our agenda is to approve the agenda with any deletions or additions. I do have several items that I would like to add to the agenda. The first one would be to approve the appointments of the circuit judge for magistrate, and I would like to put that as a first item of business prior to Road and Bridge. The second item that I would like to add, and these last two items can be done prior to monthly reports, but the first item would be to approve the contracts that we have from the towns for law enforcement. And then the third item to add would be the MOU that was proposed that we have with the town of Pinedale regarding the monuments for the VFW, as well as reviewing and approving the contract with Bott Monument Company. So with those amendments, can I have a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Is there any discussion?
I do have one for our county attorney. And it's just to clarify it for me. It's my understanding that state statute says that we have to advertise everything 24 hours previous. So when we amend the agenda, how does that work? Or can you, or is there any reason?
Can you clarify what statute you're referring
well,
to?
I don't know. Well,
might I looked in?
It's my understanding that we have to advertise everything for 24 hours before the meeting.
I don't know that. There's a vague statute in Title 16 which references how notice is to be provided, and I'm not sure it concretely nails down that you have to do that.
So there's no
probably good
there.
Practice, obviously, but as far as the legal obligation, I'm unaware of a 24-hour rule.
Okay, perfect. No, I just was clarifying that for myself.
Well, I just wonder why, because we've done this routinely, and I think there is certainly an allotment. We do publish our agenda publicly. We set the agenda the Wednesday prior to the meeting, and as with all boards, there's always a provision that you can add things to the agenda or delete them for various reasons. The day of the meeting. So we have a motion and a second.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
I think in light of what the issue is and the interest, I think it would be better served in the interest of not only us as a commission but the general population to have that out there so the folks who have an interest in the decision-making process will have an opportunity to be here. Because I checked on the website this morning before I came home or came in, and it hadn't occurred there. So the issue that we're going to discuss has not been very general knowledge in the
public. As with any addition to the agenda that has to be approved the day of the agenda, there will not be any notice prior to that approval. So whatever items we are adding today, none of those are going to have the opportunity to be advertised because they haven't been approved by this board to be placed on the agenda. And we have done this numerous times on things that have come up that are deemed important or need to be done in a timely fashion prior to the next meeting. So we have a motion and a second. If there's not any other discussion, then I'll call for the vote. All in favor of accepting the agenda as amended, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay. All right, motion passes. That's our agenda as set. So the first item on our agenda is to approve the appointments that the district or the circuit judge has made for magistrates.
Mr. Chairman, do we do the minutes first?
What's on our agenda?
The minutes of the previous meeting.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. A motion to approve the previous minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I have a change to the minutes, very minor. On the second page where it said, Commissioner Bousman stated he had communication from the governor appointing him as a county government representative. I was appointed by the prior governor as a representative for the Popo Project Office, but I'm still awaiting clarification from our present governor. And I called the people in Cheyenne, and there's a person, they call them the boards and appointments person. It's a position in state government that they review that stuff, and I'm just waiting for clarification.
Okay.
So that's the change to the minutes.
Can you, Carrie, are you clear on that?
Okay, I thought I had changed that to what you wanted. So you were appointed by the prior governor for the IPP?
For the POPO.
Okay.
Yeah. But the governor's changed, and routinely all the governor's cabinet people are automatically appointed, but I don't know if that means the governor has to go through some kind of process or not.
Okay.
I've just been understood. But I thought, well, I better check this out and make sure that that it's right. So there, I'm waiting for word back.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem. So with that change, Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the minutes.
Okay, got a motion.
Second.
All in favor of approving the amendments or the minutes as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, now we're going to go into the next item on the agenda, which is the approving of the previous appointed magistrates by Judge Hawes. And Judge Hawes, just for the record, would you tell us who the two magistrates that you appointed in January that we're going to be considering?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the commission. The two lawyers that are listed in this memorandum are John Labuda, a longtime Wyoming attorney, practiced in Sweetwater County for years, has been here, has family connections here, obviously has been here for the last 13 or 14 years as well. And then Clayton Kaner, who's practiced in Sublette County for the last 10 years or so, off the top of my head. Both highly qualified, licensed attorneys in whom I have tremendous confidence.
Okay, thank you.
There, I would note that there are others that I have appointed that are not in front of you today. One, we couldn't lay hands on the oath of office that he had signed, so the first of the year I would anticipate bringing a couple of other names before you as well. So since I've been on the bench for the last nearly 13 years, followed the practice of my predecessor, which was to select and appoint magistrates to act when I had a conflict or when I was unavailable. We provided those oaths of office and notice to the county, but we've not gone through this formal process before, simply because it's just not the way it had been done. I think this is the process that's contemplated by the statute, and so we're trying to make sure that we're in compliance with state statute.
Okay. Thank you. So at this point, I would consider a motion to approve John Labuda and Clay Kaner as magistrates that have been previously appointed to serve as a circuit court magistrates by Judge Hawes.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the recommendations of the Honorable Judge Hawes of Mr. Labuda and Mr. Kaner as the magistrates to, am I correct, the circuit court?
Thank you. Yes, that's right.
Okay. A second.
Mr. Chairman, I'll second, but I do think for my clarification, I would like to some explanation of, I don't even know what a magistrate does. It's something this board has never been into. We've never done this before, to my recollection. And I'm assuming it's to, if a judge has a conflict, then he appoints somebody to do some particular case. Is that, maybe I'm not right on that either.
No, you're exactly right. There's a number of functions that a magistrate can fill, and there's different kinds of magistrates. It's entirely possible to appoint a lay person, someone that's not law trained, to act as a magistrate. Those magistrates have limited authority. For example, they could not conduct a jury trial. Only a law-trained magistrate could do that. A lay magistrate is typically appointed to do things like perform weddings. It's not uncommon for a family member to approach me and ask if they could possibly marry their niece or something like that. And that's a one-time special purpose kind of appointment. But the magistrates like we're talking about here, both these gentlemen are law trained. They can sit in and perform every function that I would perform if I were there. So they would function either when I had a conflict or if I were out of town. If I'm out of the county and unavailable, then we have coverage in case there's an emergency or something that needs to happen. There are certain duties that I have to perform, for example, in a very timely manner. For example, if someone's arrested without a warrant, it's my obligation to review the circumstances of that arrest within 48 hours to make sure that there was sufficient evidence or probable cause to believe a crime had committed so that that person wasn't held unduly. I then either need to see that person or set bonds so that person can get out of jail within 72 hours. So those are very time-sensitive things, and it's important that we have coverage when I'm unavailable. Other things that are very time-sensitive is if a search warrant is needed. It's very common for me to get a call about 2:30 in the morning, just after the bars have closed. And someone's in custody charged with drinking too much and then driving. If that person doesn't cooperate with law enforcement and submit to chemical testing, then the law enforcement will contact me and ask for a warrant to obtain blood, breath, or urine from the suspect. Given how rapidly alcohol is metabolized, obviously that's a time-sensitive kind of a thing. Same with any other kind of a search warrant or arrest warrant that might come up. So it needs to be somebody on hand, and typically that's me. With our modern technology, I mean, I've reviewed cases, set bond from Europe on my bicycle someplace. It happens. It's very rare that I'm not available, but there are times when I'm not available, and so it's important to have coverage. It's also important to have coverage if there's a conflict, if I feel like a conflict. If a party's raised an issue that they think I might be biased or prejudiced in some fashion, or if there's something about my knowledge or association with a defendant that makes me uncomfortable and want to make sure that there's absolutely every appearance of fairness, I'll step aside so that that issue doesn't arise. So that's once the appointment's made, a magistrate will conduct every hearing in a case. all the way from the very beginning right through trial if it goes that far. Now, my obligation is to review everything that a magistrate does and to sign off on it. If I look at it and feel like the magistrate's made a decision that's not supported by the law or improper for whatever reason, I can modify or reverse that decision. If I feel like the process was done properly and the decision's sound, then I approve or sign off on that. So it's not an unfettered exercise of power by the magistrates. It's something that, again, falls ultimately back into my lap to make sure that I review and find that they're doing things appropriately. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Okay. Judge, I appreciate that.
Now we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Commissioner Baker? Different questions.
Go ahead. Whichever.
Mr. Baker.
So if I understood you correctly, then the magistrate would keep a journal of everything he does, and then you would be able to go back through that journal, if you would, or whatever you call it, diary.
Yeah.
And you'd be able to look at that all over the, and say if there, pardon me, if there were some mistakes made, then you can correct them.
I look at every file that a magistrate touches. So here's how it works. The statutes, these whole statutes are a bit of an anachronism, frankly. They reference back, this process, frankly, in my view, is an anachronism. It relates back to a time of justice of the peace courts rather than circuit courts, a time when the commission interviewed, selected, and appointed a justice of the peace and paid for the justice of the peace, the whole process. That since changed. We have circuit courts, which and the appointment process is done by the governor and the state. The state pays all the salaries and costs associated. The county provides the house and takes care of the house. And just as an aside, thank you. You treat us very, very well, and we're grateful and we appreciate it. But one of the anachronisms in the statute is it talks about a journal, that a magistrate should keep a journal of his or her activity. That doesn't happen. We have an electronic case management system now where we track everything that happens in every case. So if a magistrate is appointed to that, that electronic record would reflect that the magistrate had been appointed and was sitting as the presiding judge in that matter. As a practical matter, anytime a magistrate handles any file, Amy pulls that file for me and leaves it out for me to review. So I physically review the file. If it's necessary, I can go back and listen to the record, an electronic recording of everything that's said and done in the courtroom, and then notate on the order or anything that a magistrate signs. I will countersign that. Approved or modified. So there is not a journal in the way that we think
yeah,
of a journal.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a journal. I would be right.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. It's morphed into an electronic case management system.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller.
Your opinion on the state statute, it says that you appoint and we approve.
Correct.
Whether we approve or disapprove, what does that mean?
Well, that's a great question. You know, what if you say no?
What if?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that gets into all sorts of separation of powers issues that I frankly haven't really thought through very well. What I can tell you is, as a practical matter, is if you say no, I'm going to respect that no, and approve. And I'll go find somebody else. But I would hope that we, if there was a concern, that we could talk about it, because these are not decisions that I make lightly. And let me tell you what I look for when I appoint a magistrate. Well, first, somebody's got to be willing to do it. There are several folks that I asked who have said no, that were very experienced lawyers, frankly, just didn't have the time. And you know, if you're billing rate several hundred dollars an hour, and you take time out of your day to go take care of something for Judge Hawes and you get $75 an hour, that doesn't make a whole lot of economic sense. And so I respect that. But what I'm, other than availability and willingness, what I'm really looking for is someone who has a good understanding of the process and the law, and someone who will be fair. Because to me, that's the ultimate hallmark of a judge, is whether he or she is willing to be impartial, to listen to the evidence and the argument, and then make a decision completely independent of any prejudice or bias or anything like that. So that's what I'm looking for, and that's my commitment to you, Commissioner Noble, is that those are the men and women I'll bring to you. But if you said no, I'm going to respect that.
So, Judge, I guess it goes without saying that these two men that you have appointed as magistrates and that you're seeking our approval on have met, in your professional expertise and opinion, as judge, those criteria that you have set forth.
Without question. Yeah, you may not, you may, you know, look, I know I work. You may not like a particular decision. That's a, I'm just going to be completely candid, okay?
I think that's awesome. Okay. Please do, so we can all do that.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that both ways. I think it would be a mistake to deny someone your approval just because you disagree with a specific decision. First of all, judges and magistrates are called upon to make tough decisions. And I can tell you that the very last consideration in my mind, and the very last consideration I would expect from either Mr. Labuda or Mr. Kaner, is to ask themselves the question, how's this going to be received in the community? Is this going to be a popular thing, or is this going to be an unpopular thing? That's not a proper inquiry. The inquiry should be, what are the facts, and how do those facts apply to the law? And if you make that a proper analysis there, then you let the chips fall where they may. And you know, if we're not, it's not a popularity contest. It's an effort to do justice. And sometimes, in a particular case, without a full understanding of the facts, perhaps it doesn't appear to be very just.
Do you ever, in your consideration, reach out to, say, the county attorney and see how they feel, or is that above and beyond? Or
I don't, because I don't think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
Because we have an adversary system, and I don't want one party or the other party to have any say in who I appoint, because I'm not interested in having a partisan. We got enough of that in the country right now. That should not happen in a court of law. So I don't. I can tell you that these two gentlemen have both practiced on both sides of the street in the criminal law sense. Mr. Kaner is a former county attorney. He's also defense counsel. John Labuda has been primarily a defense attorney. So we got both sides of the street covered pretty well, but I'm really uninterested in a partisan, somebody that's pro law enforcement or pro defense. That I've never had a discussion with anyone about that. I wouldn't, and if someone tried to have that conversation with me, I probably would not bring their name to you.
So, Mr. Chairman, and I thank you. I thank you for the explanation so far in this. And I really appreciate the fact that you said, let's be frank, because I think sometimes we have a tendency to back away from Frank and go with Sally, and probably we should. So the question I have then is this. this apparently has been an ongoing situation that has not been approved by the commission, at least Sublette County.
That's right.
And the gentleman in question was presented by you. You had, I'm groping for the terminology to use, you had interviewed, I'll use that term, interviewed in the first part of January. Now all of a sudden we have to fast track this thing and we can't wait for a couple more weeks so we have an opportunity. What, why is that?
Well, we're just trying to bring into, I'm trying to bring into conformity my conduct with state statute. So I'm not trying to give you the bum's rush at all. I was under the understanding that the process we had in place was satisfactory. That's been called into question. And I'm always willing to take a look at my actions to see if I can do things better. This is the better way. I think I can make a good argument that we're okay, but I don't want to be in that situation of trying to make a good argument that what I've done is okay. I'd rather make sure that it's absolutely okay. So I'm not trying to put the bum's rush on you at all. Here's what's happened. Since I took the bench, I have appointed magistrates. They have served for the last 13 years. They have made decisions. The majority of them have been good decisions. I honestly, as I sit here today, can't tell you. I'm trying to think of a specific instance in where I've overruled a magistrate's decisions. I've modified a few, but I haven't come right out and said that's dead wrong and I overrule it. They take an oath of office. That's a sworn statement. I enter an order of appointment. Those documents we've provided, brought over and provided to the county. And my assumption was if there was an issue that I'd hear back. That was a poor assumption, probably. And as things change, as new people come in to sit in your chairs, it was silly of me to assume that we were all on the same page. So this is, Mr. Vickery, is simply an attempt to get us on the same page.
Well, I appreciate that. And so, and bear with me, because I don't know a lot about the court system. Having
absolutely.
Been before either you.
I love it. So I'm happy to talk about it all day to the dismay of Roden Bridge. Sorry.
So your jurisdiction is just within Sublette County?
No, sir. I have statewide jurisdiction.
Statewide jurisdiction.
This is my primary responsibility. Sublette County is my primary responsibility.
So you would appoint magistrates other places?
No.
Just here.
Okay. And for your information, I gave you a preview of coming attractions. I have appointed Christopher Lee out of Jackson to have Christopher on standby in case we had a situation where there was something that was of such local interest that maybe a truly outside third person ought to come in and be in the case. And Chris has served during spring breaks and stuff like that when everybody's gone. Chris doesn't have kids, and so Chris is available. But I'll bring you his name later. I just couldn't find his oath of office. It's in my car somewhere, I think. But Amy, sorry, I was supposed to give that to you. We reside in what's called the Ninth Judicial District, which is comprised of Sublette County, Pecan County, and Fremont County. So I frequently circuit to those two other counties to cover conflicts for the judges there. But I only appoint magistrates for Sublette County. The other judges in those counties have their own magistrates.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Something was said a minute ago. We all know why we're here, and everybody kind of smiled. Well, I don't know. I'm sorry, I've been out of town. And so consequently, we are here to approve the Honorable Judge Hawes's recommendation for two magistrates.
Appointments, yes.
Two appointments. So I don't believe, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm not sure I'm qualified to figure out who can do this job and who can't. But he can. And so for us to micromanage these appointments is ludicrous. And I don't mean to oversimplify this, but if we have a huge snowstorm tomorrow, I'm not calling Billy and say, get up and plow my road. Or which road are you going to plow first? That's Billy's decision. As every elected official, every department head, that's their job to make these decisions, as this is Judge Hawes's decision. It's just us to approve his decision, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, so I'd like to key into what Max said. It's to approve or disapprove, and it's set up as government as a checks and balances. The people speak through us to him. So if we approve or disapprove, then he respects that or doesn't. So this is a checks and balances. And being what Doug just asked, there's no hurry, and there's obviously some contention to this, I make a motion we table this for 2 weeks and we get back to it.
I'm sorry, we already have a motion on the table.
Okay, well, then we'll go to that one. And then Clayton has a conversation.
I'm a little bit confused here. I don't know what the undercurrent of this is, and under the circumstances and the way the situation has changed, when years ago, if we used to appoint justices of the peace, which was before my time, obviously, and the law has changed, it seems to me like for us to do anything other than approve a judge's appointment is inappropriately inserting ourselves into the separation of powers. I mean, this is about the law. This isn't about politics.
Well, the statute does say that we have, that the commissioners can either accept or reject the appointment.
I understand.
So it does give you that option.
I understand that. And I'm expressing the opinion that it's a formality to approve this appointment rather than us inserting ourselves into, apparently listening to my fellow commissioners talk, there's some undercurrent of some case somewhere, either John Labuda or Clayton Kainer's ruling that they don't like, or they've heard some feedback that somebody doesn't like it. And I don't think it's appropriate. As the judge explained, it's about the law. It isn't about whether you like a ruling or not. That's what appeals are about. And I'm really nervous inserting us into this argument.
I would just like to go back to a comment that's been made about delay in this process, and I don't see the need for it, and I'll tell you why. Number one, we have the responsible people right here in front of us. We, the commissioners, are responsible to make a decision on whether we want to accept or reject Judge Hawes's recommendations. We have had the opportunity, and are very thankful for Judge Hawes being here and being as candid in making his presentation with regard to the process by which he selects these individuals, the process of the expectations he has and the review that he gives. And I go back to one of Judge Hall's comments and to emphasize that now, and that is our decisions are going to be based on what we think is right. We're not looking for a popularity contest out there and trying to be moved or motivated by what people are saying. This is our decision. I don't see any reason to prolong it. We have a motion and a second. We can continue conversations if somebody else has something to say. And I guess, Clayton, that would include you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to take just a moment. I want to hearken back to a question from Commissioner Bousman, where the question was, what magistrates do. I'm in an advising position from the county attorney's office. I think it's important to make sure that I would suggest to the Mr. Chairman to get clarification whether this is a full-time magistrate or a part-time magistrate, as a full-time magistrate is under one statute and a part-time magistrate is under the other.
This is a part-time magistrate. There is no full-time magistrate in Sublette County.
Okay. And that is the reason we would be asking for that I would suggest asking for the clarification. And of course, with all due respect to Judge Haas, on this, I want to make sure that the commission understands the procedure of appointment for part-time magistrates. Statute reads, in part, if circuit court judge finds public interest requires a magistrate for any county within the judge's circuit, irrespective of whether, so yes, that has been, so this we've already discussed, or has been discussed, is the Sublette County, so that is within the judge's circuit. Irrespective of where the circuit court judge resides, that's kind of beside the point. Then the judge shall submit the name of person for approval or rejection to the Board of Commissioners of the county wherein the magistrate will serve. Upon approval by the board, the circuit court shall appoint. So there's been conversation, and I want to make sure that this is clear for you, Mr. Chairman, that this is not an approval of an appointment, but rather this is an approval for the purposes of appointment, very much akin to the way that any judge is selected. There's a judicial nominating committee that selects three names, submits those names to the executive, being the governor. The governor then chooses of those three to make that appointment. The commissioners sit in a position of somewhat of an amalgamation of legislative and executive, but also ultimately this statute 59210 is essentially laying out a process akin to that, where the name is submitted to the board. The board approves, and upon, as it says in the statute, upon approval by the board, that is you all, the circuit court shall appoint. So I want to make sure that there's clarification, especially kind of going back to what you just said, Commissioner Rahauser, that the commission is not here approving an appointment, but rather approving the name submitted for the purposes of appointment. And to you, Commissioner Bousman, the duties or what the part-time magistrate powers is here in this statute. If anybody wants to see, so that there's any questions about what that part-time magistrate can and can't do.
So. Mr. Chairman, can I inquire of counsel?
Yes.
Counsel, do you feel like I have misstated in any way any of the duties and responsibilities of a magistrate to serve in this position?
This is where I'm in a little bit of an awkward position. I would suggest in my reading of the statute, a part-time magistrate with the powers listed in the statute of a part-time magistrate, that the part-time magistrate has a specific list of powers that they can do, but it does not include in a criminal case or in a civil case from beginning to end through trial, only upon request and consent of all the parties to a proceeding. And so that is, in my reading of the two statutes, the difference between a full-time magistrate and a part-time magistrate. Whereas a full-time magistrate in 59208, Romanette, I believe this is 18 if I have my Roman numerals correct, that a full-time magistrate can arraign, try, and sentence defendants, whereas a part-time magistrate in misdemeanor cases, they can conduct arraignments, accept plea agreements, order the examination of a defendant for not guilty by reason of mental illness or deficiency, pleas, they can order pretrial investigations, order substance abuse evaluations, and order and conduct pretrial conferences. Enter orders of sentencing, a post-sentence, so on and so forth, but does not describe the ability to sit and hear a trial. Only upon the request and consent of all the parties. And that's, of course, that's my reading. I'm not, this is my reading of it. So that is as I'm seeing, the key difference between a full-time and a part-time, and that's why I thought it was important to go to your question, Commissioner Bousman, of whether this be a full-time or a part-time, and the duties according.
So after all of that,
I guess with the judges 13 years on the bench and having appointed numerous part-time magistrates in the past decade, I would think, and I'm not the legal expert, that the judge knows fully well what the duties of the magistrate has done. And is there any suggestion that the judge has gone beyond what the statute allows for the magistrate to do? And I guess the thing is there a simple answer? The judge just asks a simple question.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'm not sure this is really pertinent for Mr. Kane, or Mr. Milinkovich to answer at this point in time, or if it's not relevant to whether you're going to appoint or disappoint. It's a procedural thing. We are, I will put on the record, filing a motion in circuit court which addresses these issues, but I just don't feel it's appropriate for him to dive into that subject at this time, since I don't see it as bearing upon your decision. If you feel differently, I'll field the questions. But.
Oh, I agree with you. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, yeah. After Mr. Crossan speaking like that, I call for the question.
Okay. Question's been called. We have a motion and a second to approve the appointment to the circuit court magistrates that Judge Haas has given us in a memorandum dated December 16th. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Aye. I think we should have tabled it.
Motion carries 3-2. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Appreciate the questions and the opportunity to be here. Hope you have an easier rest of the morning.
We are.
Thank you, Judge.
Maybe Billy
very
can
sorry.
Say that.
Yeah. Sorry about the position.
All right, Billy, are you ready to follow that?
Well, good morning.
How are you, Billy?
Based on my activity report, road and bridge were just kind of snow removal, snow catchers, all the hauling snow everywhere. Doing some snow crushing, making sand. That's about all I got for road and bridge. I do have for waste management, real fast. I wanted you guys to, it's that time of year about the rates. A couple years ago, we all agreed on, because the tires was such a big deal, we agreed on going up $30 a ton every year. So I just wanted you to, and I kind of showed on the back page here, it'll tell you what we finally got all the tires, the stockpile of tires hauled away. And I mean, we do have, you know, people, of course, think the tires, you know, we do get people whining about the price, you know, what we charge, but just to go over that real fast, everything else is, I think we ought to stick to the same. You know, in the landfill, I've learned in the last couple of years, you got to kind of be careful with, you know, with your pricing, because they start dumping stuff everywhere. Right now, they're, you know, the trash companies are happy with the rates, and everybody seems to be doing fine. But the only thing is the tires is a big deal. If you look on the second page, this year was kind of the first year we had, you know, so many tires, but this is the first year I've been able to really keep track of what's coming in, you know, I've kept track the last couple of years, but I mean, we had such a stockpile to be recycled that I had to budget way different. But, so like this year, we, as of right now from July, we've taken in 200 ton. I'm figuring by next July we'll be about 300 ton of tires. Well, we're taking in for tires this year, if we, based on training, it'll be like 39,000 what we take in. To recycle them costs us $200 a ton, and that's not the trucking. We're trucking them there, but I didn't figure in the trucking in this. I'm just showing you what, you know, cost of what we're taking in. So it's costing us $60,000 to get rid of them, but we're taking in 39. A couple years ago, we said that we would, for the next 5 years, we would try to go up $30 a ton. So that's what I'm asking, because it's that time of year. We always start doing it in January. So I just wanted to see if you guys want to go up on the tires, you want to stick where we're at.
And the rate right now is $130 per
yes.
ton? And you're asking that we go to $160
because
that's what we had talked about.
Yes.
At the current rate of $130 a ton, we're projected to lose $21,000 just taking care of the tires.
Exactly.
So, I don't know what you guys think, but I think it's totally appropriate to go up $30 a ton.
Well, it looks like we need to. That
yeah.
was the original intent to try mm-hmm. and cover some of the cost.
People are still getting the deal. I mean, every and all the other landfills are, you know, way higher than we are.
Mr. Chairman,
say if they don't like the price, they could go to a different landfill, but that isn't going to happen because they're going to cost them more.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I worry about them tossing, you know, in, but I mean, that's just what we'll have to deal with.
Billy, if it would be possible, it would be nice to see a graph of what everybody else is doing.
I can do that.
So, because the term, I like to write down terms, and the word was whining. And so when that comes, because it does.
Oh, it does.
That you can say, well, here's what happens in Lincoln County. Here's what happens in, well,
right.
not Teton County, but any other counties compared to what we're doing here in Sublette County.
Right.
So
I'll get that for you. I
would appreciate that.
I talked to Sweetwater and Fremont.
Sure.
And they both charge more, way more. Now,
mm-hmm. So there's still incentive to bring them to our landfill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still subsidized.
Yeah.
Other comment?
All right. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. That. Other than that, that's all I have for waste management. You know, my expensive stuff.
Yeah, so I emailed you gentlemen the proposals that we received, and I have a back here.
I'd like to abstain from that. Portion of the conversation.
Okay.
So as opposed to both.
Okay. Really noted.
And I have Mr.
Sorry. Can I visit with Billy about a road and bridge issue for just a moment before we get into this, or should I wait until after this discussion?
If it's a road and bridge issue, he's giving us a report around here.
Okay. So here's the deal. There's an embankment issue on the Green River that needs some rock hauling. The gentleman that owns the property that's going to be affected by it, his name is Tom Brown, he owns what is the old Bill Pate place. The river, the last few years, and it's on our property, but it has cut a new channel, and if that thing is not taken care of, ultimately, that whole river is going to go the one direction. And Mr. Brown has, over the years, had the Wright brothers do the work for him. And they have made arrangements with my approval to pile the rock on our property so it could be there for the first time in the spring that they could get in there to do the work. The issue comes with the weather is going to snow out up here on the skyline where the rock is available. And I know that Levi has asked me to talk to Billy, and I think he has talked to Billy about could it be a possibility now while they can move rock to make a trade with the county that they could get the rock from the county stockpile, and then when the weather is pertinent to moving from Skyline to replace that rock. So that's my request, is to, with Billy's authorization, to allow him to make that discussion with our approval to do so.
Well, I guess the concern I have right now is that's not really a road bridge request. That's a request from the commissioners to allow somebody to get the rocks. And that's one of the things that I would go back to previous discussion and really rather defer that to a time we can have that on the agenda as a discussion item rather than doing it on the spot with Billy from Road Bridge, because we have a tight agenda today. I'm sure there's going to be some questions and discussions on the precedent set and so on. So I think I would feel more comfortable not including that under the Road and Bridge discussion, but having it brought forth perhaps as an agenda item on the next meeting.
I guess that's what it'll be.
Well, I mean, we've got other people who want to comment. I mean, it's just understand. You wanted to ask a question regarding Road and Bridge and their operation report. If, Billy, you want to address that, or if you guys want to consider that, speak up. I'm just saying it's new business and a new item of concern that we haven't been, I don't even know basically what you're talking about. But without knowing that, I guess in pursuing that, you're asking basically for this individual to be able to borrow from a county rock pile
under Billy's purview.
Borrow from a county rock pile to put rocks on your property for somebody to use for a project that then is going to be replaced next year back to the county. And I guess that's why I'd rather have that discussion in terms of setting that precedent. But if you guys want to consider it now, speak up.
I'll put my two cents in. Doesn't appear to be, I don't mean to pick on you, Doug, but this is your neighbor's issue between Billy and the rocks. I don't know where you come into this. It seems a little strange.
Just being the good guy.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to avoid that myself, but obviously you chose differently. I think your neighbors should contact Billy.
I withdraw my request. I didn't realize it was going to be this big an issue. I apologize for bringing it before this commission and taking up the most valuable of time. So I will see that it's on the agenda next year, by the way.
For the future, Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question? Is this a certified project?
It's in the river. Falls under those categories.
So
yes.
Somebody has, this is all, got it all figured out through the, I'm not sure who I'm talking about. But
honestly, I think it would be best for that individual to come forward rather than have a commission that's involved in it, even on the periphery, asking for the county to do it.
Well, I understand that. The individual is a California. So it can be a little bit.
I understand.
Mr. Chairman. I'll withdraw my request. I didn't realize it was going to be this big a deal. Thank you.
Thank you for
your time. Just one thought, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to read between the lines here, but it appears that the issue is can't get at the rocks of Skyline because it's snowed out. And in order to get the rock stockpiled in a way to do the project in a timely manner to get the rocks in before high water next year, I think might be what's behind this. And my only thought is at the next meeting, if we're going to consider this, my preference would be to have some kind of an agreement in writing that would assure the county that if we allow rocks from the Daniel site where we store them, that we have some assurance that those rocks will be replaced. Right. That would be my only concern. So that said, just a suggestion, if it's going to be on a future agenda, that would be my point I would make, is we need some assurance that if we allow rocks to leave for a project that are county rocks, that we have assurance that those rocks will be replaced.
And I understand that's all the intent behind having it as an agenda item rather than as an impromptu thing brought up as
Understood.
So I think if whether the individual's here or not, if you would like to present that to us or make a request, we can consider that in our next meeting.
And like, you know, on stuff that we have, I mean, there's been contractors on big projects that haven't been able to get pipe and stuff, and they've borrowed from us, but we have been getting it in writing now because we didn't get some stuff, replaced at certain times. So yeah, I mean, something in writing I think would be good.
It's something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we're back to you, Mike.
Okay.
Well, you have to speak loud because we don't have.
I think the batteries are here. I feel happy so much.
Apologize for that. That was good. Okay, well, I guess we're ready.
Yeah.
Everybody hear me all right? Okay.
Well, we got Mr. Mike Oldman, who's the Forest Service engineer, with us today, so he agreed to come up from Jackson.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
And I think he'd like to just discuss some nuances with Schedule A stuff, and I guess we can get into that with any questions you have. Mike's here to answer questions, talk about future projects. The project at hand, so this is the first Schedule A project, is the Clark Draw Sandy Marshall Maintenance Project. We had a good local turnout. We ended up with 5 proposals. And as you can see, we have them listed with their proposal amounts. Once we received these 5 proposals, I issued copies to Mr. Pate and Mr. Oldman for their individual assessment. When we worked down through these, it's their proposals, so you're able to do what you'd like with each. You can look at cost, and the cost is the most important factor. It's really up to you. We looked at the proposals themselves and what the minimum requirements were in the request that we submitted. All 3 of us individually thought that the Teletractors Incorporated and Hughes Enterprises Inc. were the most complete proposals, timelines. Competitive costs. So those were the 2 that we said would be recommended. However, Co-Construction Inc. is the lowest number that we received. You've all had a chance to read those. I did make contact with Mr. Coe to make sure he was good with the number, and he thought he was. That's kind of what we're working with. And I did issue our letter of recommendation as well, which was done with obviously Mike and Billy. So with that, I'd open it up for what you guys would like to do for approving moving forward. And we have plenty of time before construction. If you've got any questions, or would like to do interviews or, you know, negotiate, that's a possibility as well. So
Mike, do you have anything you would like to add in terms of this process, the recommendations that you've made along with Mike Jackson?
I think, first of all, the Bridger Teton National Forest would like to thank Mr. Jackson and Mr. Pape for being excellent cooperators on this project. They've been extremely great to work with, and honestly, we've really seen eye to eye on every single aspect of this project moving forward, and we'd love the cooperation of the county on future projects. So we really want to give Sunbelt County an outstanding thank you for the work that's gone on and the work that we'll continue to do together. Second, like Mike said, I'm here kind of today. I can answer any questions about the process, how the master agreement works, how we add or delete roads, how we decide how things get funded. I can talk about our internal budget and our internal capabilities, or answer any other questions that you gentlemen might have regarding the process or just kind of road maintenance in general. My position recently went from engineering to now I'm in charge of recreation, engineering, heritage, lands, and minerals. So if you have questions about kind of any of that process, my face, what I do, some of our internal leadership changes that have happened, I'm happy to speak to pretty much anything that the gentleman would ask to. And to answer your original, sorry if I interrupted you, to answer your original question, no, I 100% concur with the recommendations that Mr. Jackson put into that letter.
Okay. As far as your comment, I'll open it up to the other commissioners. I don't have questions per se at this time. I am excited to know that you guys have gotten together, because I think that speaks well for what projects or concerns we may have moving forward in areas that perhaps we didn't know we had opportunities for. So I really look forward to, on our part, working with you to try to maximize the opportunities as well as the efforts to have those accomplishments.
The Forest Service completely concurs. Okay. Thank you for that, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up a little bit, I do totally concur that using the Schedule A process, it's obvious we can get a lot more benefit to the public by using that process than not using the process, because we bypass a lot of the federal malarkey paperwork criteria to get a project done. It's a lot simpler doing it through our process, and it's just a win-win for the taxpayer. I've had this discussion with the chief, with the regional forester, with the forest supervisor, emphasizing the need and the advantage to figuring out a way to schedule more dollars, if possible, into Schedule A. And one of the Even if it's not Schedule A, because Schedule A, as my understanding, is leftover money at the end of the budget year that can be applied, as opposed to standalone budgeted dollars to go into Schedule A. And correct me, Mike, if I'm wrong on that. If it was budgeted money, that's even better than having to be left over. But there is some opportunity under a bill in the Senate right now with increasing the transportation dollars available, where a year ago they were emphasizing more money for Park Service for transportation. Now they're talking about more money for the Forest Service for transportation, and I've been kind of tracking that and having discussion with the chief about the need to upgrade the Green River Lakes Road and the road over Union Pass. There would be a benefit to timber management, to recreation, to agriculture, to all the multiple users that use that road. And I've been surprisingly seem to be, the people I talk to seem to be supportive of that process, and I just wanted to bring that up so Mike knows that we consider this very important to get more work done on the ability to fix the roads on the forest.
May I comment?
Yes, sir,
Chairman?
Please.
Everything you said, Mr. Bousman, is completely correct. A couple of points of clarity about the advantages of the Schedule A is that when I go out and I bid a project like this, almost no local contractors ever bid. I get people, like we did boat ramps in the Snake River Canyon. My contractor came from Florida. They won the bid. And so with the Schedule A, it gives the commissioners a unique ability to keep the money in the county with the county contractor, which the federal government doesn't have. So that's another benefit that I'd really like to bring up. And if I can speak really quickly to the funding, we've gotten Schedule A funding from many different sources, and I get about $850,000 a year to maintain 2,200 miles of road, which is a joke. But I can take that money off the top and put it into Schedule A at any time at pretty much my discretion with permission of my boss, which they've never denied.
Good.
So we can get year-end money. We can get money like the Joint Chiefs came in. On a recent project with Lincoln County, we had an opportunity to apply for money to improve roads through the timber program, and we did, and we got it. To speak to Union Pass and Green River Lakes Road, this is the first year in about 5 years that the Washington office has put out a call for capital improvement projects, where they take money off the top for capital improvements in the areas of trails, facilities, and roads including road bridges as well. And so we applied for money to redo the Union Pass Road and the Green River Lakes Road through the new capital improvement project process, which nobody can really give me a lot of answers about it because it's been so many years since we did it and they stood up a completely new program. But we are very cognizant of the high priority roads in Sublette County, and that's part of me coming here is to kind of emphasize that we totally agree that Green River Lakes Road and Union Pass, especially for timber on Union Pass, would be huge priorities that if we could look at something other than the Federal Land Access Program, which I know I think the commissions are familiar with the process on FLAP.
Right. Well, Skyline Drive is an example of that.
Yes, sir. Yeah. If we could look at other opportunities, we'll take anything we can get for any of these high priority areas.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to thank these three guys for putting this together and then getting it to us in a way that I can understand, and so I can make an intelligent decision on recommendations on which way we should go. Because if I would have had to read all the way through, which I did, but there again, my eyes are crossed at the end. This was good stuff. I really do appreciate it, getting this to us with you guys' recommendations, because you know what you're talking about. I'm sorry, I'm still a novice at building roads.
Mike, I'd like to ask a question for here. So somewhere in this thing, we have a cap at 290 million, I think.
290,000.
How much?
290,000.
290 million. I'm in big numbers.
I'm sorry.
I apologize for that. 290,000. And someplace, I think I saw, now you correct me if I misread this, but someplace I thought I saw you make a comment, be sure you use all the money. Is that correct?
That's my opinion, sir. Okay. Is that we'd be foolish not to. The money doesn't come back to the Bridger Teton. We commit the money, yeah. And then if we have to de-obligate, is the term, it goes back to a magic pot in Washington, D.C.
No, and I understand and appreciate that, but my question, I guess, is, as I look at the bids here, with the exception of one, everybody is under that. So does that leave the door open for change order until they get to that max?
Yes, sir, it could. Or the other thing that I talked with Mr. Jackson about is we're gonna be cooperatively inspecting this project over the summer during construction season. So if the county chose to use a portion of those savings to fund the wages you have to pay Mr. Jackson, we agreed to review the agreement and make sure that was fully in the paperwork. But everything, to the best of my knowledge, it would be perfectly legal for you to cover his or Billy's wages for any inspection services they provide this summer. So if you did have a little bit of extra meat, you could cover some wages with that, sir.
I see. Okay, thank you for that.
I think this conversation merged into a couple other ones, and I abstained earlier, but this is not pertaining. So you're saying that we can use, rather than a match, we can use the money above and beyond to pay the engineers as inspections.
I will follow up with an email to Mr. Jackson that 100% validates that, but I'm like 98% sure, sir, that is correct.
So it's a win-win.
It's absolutely win-win because it helps the county cover an expense, and it helps me with the fact that I have a small engineering shop, and it's a long drive for me to get out to the project. And Mike and I have seen completely eye to eye, so I have complete faith and confidence that between the two of us, we'll be able to implement a highly successful project.
And I have complete faith and confidence we'll end up making it to $290,000.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. We actually look a little bit bad if we apply for the money and then don't spend it, is kind of another caveat, to be perfectly frank.
Right. Well, appreciate that. So is there any other
any other discussion on this? We have a proposal in front of us for this Claude Drawer Sandy Marshall maintenance. Would anybody like to make a motion forthcoming on how we award that?
Mr. Chairman, and I guess first, I assume nothing has changed in your proposal and your recommendation?
No.
Okay, so based on that, they recommended two possibilities, two recommendations. We
right.
pick from the two. One of them is 46. Nine, they're really close. One is $9,000 less than the other one. So with that in mind, I would move we accept a proposal from Teletractors in the amount of $246,260.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to award this Claude Drawer Sandy Marshall maintenance project Teletractors in the amount of $246,260. Is there any discussion? If not, I'll call a question. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 With one abstention, motion carries. Okay. Thanks for your work,
you.
Guys. Appreciate it. And Ms. Stoltman, it was very nice meeting you. I hope we can speak again and look forward to our county being able to work with you on moving forward on some of these concerns and projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll do everything we can to get you more money.
Yeah, we're working on it too, sir.
Questions? Mr. Noble.
Could this, for in the future, for we have the same issue, let's say we're coming under this project price, could the money be separated from there to do smaller projects in a different area? Say we have a culvert washed out and we all agree that that's a priority. For example, in this case, we could have took $40,000 and went to fix that area. Is that an option, or does it all have to stay on this project?
What we could do, sir, I believe, is a lot of times in the government, to have flexibility, like what you're talking about, I'll write a contract with base bid items and then optional bid items, mm-hmm. which they'll bid on, and then we don't have to award unless it's at our discretion. So we could write an agreement that has base bid items that would cover the core work you want done.
So
and then
you should do optional bid items?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. So I would recommend that in the future, so we could.
I've never. Oh, sorry.
No, just possibly spread the money out a little differently if they don't get to the allotted amount of money.
And the key is we just need to make sure that whatever road we're talking about is in the master agreement, mm-hmm. and we can amend it very quickly and easily if it for some reason wasn't.
Okay. Thank you.
So pretty much any county or Forest Service road, this can apply to. The Schedule A doesn't have to be on Forest Service roads; it can be on a county road as well. All we have to do is make sure it's in the agreement. The Schedule A really just serves as a legal means of passing goods, resources, or money, or time, or any quantifiable asset in between local and federal governments.
Thank you very much. I think that opens up some options in the future.
Any other questions for these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Good job.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Great. Is that,
yeah. Quick break.
Yeah, quick break.
Why would you start it?
I got a point.
I'm just kidding.